Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 72 of our series, covering the entire run of the X-Files. And today we're talking about The Sixth Extinction and The Sixth Extinction 2, Amor Fati. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined again by Andrew Blaker. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Carl.
So, today's episodes were both broadcast in November 1999. The Sixth Extinction is the season premiere. It was written by Chris Carter and directed by Kim Manners. And in this episode, this is the one that follows on from Biogenesis, Scully is in the Ivory Coast attempting to decipher symbols from a beached spacecraft, whilst Mulder remains hospitalised. Okay, Andrew, I think you mentioned to me that it had been a while since you'd seen these two. So what did you think about this one this time around?
You know, there's a lot going on in the episode. There's an awful lot. But for me, the action picks up more in the second part of The Sixth Extinction than the first. Not a huge fan of the first episode. I like some of the ideas that are presented, but I feel like it just, I don't know, for some reason I've never really liked this arc with Scully in Africa and the, you know, the development of the ancient astronaut ideas. And I don't know, for some reason it just never really interested me a whole lot.
I agree with you. I think this middle part sags a little. And I think, actually, if you think about some of the other trilogies in the series, that can be the case, can't it? If you think about, like, The Blessing Way and Redux One, often, like, the central part of a trilogy is not the strongest. But, yeah, this kind of feels like a transitional episode, which kind of is kind of dealing with what happened in Biogenesis. But, like you say, the real meaty stuff, I think, is in The Sixth Extinction 2.
Yeah.
But there's some interesting things to mention here anyway. So Scully's got this storyline where, you know, there's all this stuff's going on, the boiling water, the bug attacks, this mysterious man that she keeps seeing. I don't know, because part of me thinks this is, in a way, it's kind of a nice change of pace for the mythology episodes, you know. Like, what did you think of that side of the episode? I know you said you're not a massive fan.
I'm really not. I thought some of the themes were well done. The biblical allusions, I guess you should say, that the idea of some of the plagues, the locusts, to water turning into blood. Some of that was neat, but in a way it almost feels like you have two different episodes kind of smashed together. You have the Scully in Africa action, which is most of the episode, and then you have Mulder in Washington with Skinner. Might I say, we get more Skinner action in the first 10 minutes of this episode than the entirety of season 10. So that was good. That was definitely a plus. But it's like they kind of just smashed two episodes together. And the Scully part of it, I never really cared for. It was just a little too pseudo-spiritual for me, a little too. And it was like, it was written only by Chris Carter. And so that kind of shows through for me. It just kind of feels like it's, like, what's the intention here? One thing I was curious about, maybe you can address this. I was trying to pinpoint how long she's been in Africa when this episode picks up.
It's a good question. I haven't actually kind of scrutinized the episodes to the extent of putting the chronology together. I don't know. What were you thinking?
I felt like I'd read some part of it that it had picked up like a month or two later. But that doesn't seem right to me that Mulder would be held in one of those cells for a month or two. That doesn't seem, I mean, that seems like a huge stretch. So I don't know. I guess in my mind, it plays more like it's been maybe a couple of weeks.
Yeah. If I'd had to guess, I would have said, you know, a few days to 2 weeks somewhere in there. I guess months. Yeah. I never thought about it being that long.
Yeah. I don't think so. And I don't think there's any like timestamp or anything that gives us a definitive answer on it.
No, I don't think so either. Can we just backtrack slightly, just back to something else you said? So, you know, you said, like, you know, this was written by Chris Carter on his own, and it really shines through. I mean, I know some listeners will know exactly what you mean by that, but maybe maybe some won't. So what exactly are you referring to there?
This is kind of where, I mean, you have, and like I said, like Chris Carter, I'm not trying to hit on him too much, but or whatever, but I do feel like some of the dialogue in this episode is really just not really on target. I mean, you have some of the, you know, the long monologues. I mean, this episode opens with a long monologue. Amor Fati opens with a long monologue. And some of the monologues are okay, but they seem overly done. And it kind of overpowers the plot, especially in this first part. I felt like there really wasn't, especially with Scully's end of it, it was heavier on dialogue than plot, which is okay if your dialogue is, like, really good, which I don't feel like it is really good. So I guess when I say Chris Carter, he definitely has the interest in the realms of the spiritual, the sciences, which is great. And, he has used that to some good effect in the show. But I feel like this was kind of a place where he kind of indulged that spiritual side a little bit more and the plot suffered for it, in my view.
It sometimes feels to me like the spiritual stuff you refer to and like the monologues and the voiceover and that kind of thing, it sometimes feels like those are, storytelling choices that have dated quicker than the rest of the series in some ways. In the 1990s, some people would comment on that, but it seems to be something that gets talked about even more as the years have gone past. That's my impression of it anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, like I said, at the time, it may, it's hard to say. At the time, it may have been more frequently seen in TV shows of that era. So it probably has been something that's kind of dated it a bit.
So before we move on to like Mulder's storyline, there's one moment here with the fish in the bag that come back to life. Mm-hmm. And I know there's like an interesting reading of that the spacecraft can restore life, and some people have taken that to mean that Scully encountering this spaceship is the thing that's kind of restored her fertility, which means that later in the series she's able to get pregnant, of course, at the end of the season. So I don't know if you had a particular like view on that, or if you'd heard that before.
I had not heard that before. No, that's really interesting. But I mean, it's certainly, it's as valid a theory as any, I think, given that we don't really have an answer to how someone who says she is infertile becomes pregnant. So I think that's a really interesting theory. I mean, it does seem to have those, those miraculous powers. Like I said, the locust plague, the water turning into boiling water and then blood. And it seems to kind of have that ability. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, I like that idea. I'll give a shout out to Chris Knowles because I think he was the one who mentioned that to me. It may even have been his suggestion, actually, to begin with. I'm not sure. So back in the USA, of course, we have Mulder in the hospital. He's experiencing abnormal brain activity. He's got telepathic powers and so on. This storyline sees the return of Michael Crichgau, played by John Finn. I like Crichgau. I like John Finn as an actor. I think he's very good. Unlike in Redux, when he's given this kind of this history lesson to recite. I think he delivers the dialogue with with aplomb. What did you think about Crichgau and his role in this episode?
I liked that they brought him back. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, I think was Redux the last time we saw him?
Yes.
Okay. So,
Redux 2, I think.
And that I think the last scene we saw with him was him being approached by people at the was it the DOD where he worked?
Yes.
Okay. So, you don't know what to make of that, if he's going to be, fired or killed or what. But you see him in a, crappy apartment in a crappy part of town with, having lost his government pension. And it seemed like, this has taken a very real effect on him. He's lost his son had passed away. He's seemingly divorced. He's lost everything. And I thought that was a pretty effective turn of events to explore with that. So I liked seeing him back. It may have been a bit forced in that he suddenly plunged into this whole, seemingly psychic phenomena, which, he doesn't really seem to put much credence in, but I'm glad they at least, cared enough to bring him back.
And it's another one of those curious season openers where Mulder's he's absent in a way. I mean, he's physically present and he does have some stuff to do. Mm-hmm. But, like in the Blessing way where he's kind of sidelined and obviously within and without, he's present on screen for fleeting amounts of time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. How do you feel about the way David Duchovny was used in this one particularly?
Like I said, I've never really cared a huge amount for the plot, so I felt like it wasn't very effective. But I think that touches on something interesting because now probably not all those episodes that we're pointing to had explicit writing or directing credit to Carter, but there are a lot of people who kind of feel like Chris Carter goes out of his way to try to keep Mulder and Scully separated. And they pointed to My Struggle 2 as perfect evidence of that, which I think there's a case for that. He seems to think that the story can be advanced more by keeping them apart, which I think at certain times is true. But I think this is probably just another example of where he kind of wanted to explore separate plot lines by keeping them apart.
Yeah, and I think also there may have been like logistical reasons, often, as to why Duchovny and Anderson kind of had to be split up and so on. So, yeah, although My Struggle 2 is a very extreme example of the tendency you're speaking of.
Yes.
Did you have any other notes on this episode, Andrew?
I liked that we kind of get some closure in this episode as well as the sequel part to Diana Fowley. I couldn't help but draw some parallels between her and the Monica Reyes we see in My Struggle 2. Not to say that they are the same individual by any means, but there's some parallels that can be drawn there. I mean, we don't really know what Diana Fowley's motives are for aligning with the cigarette smoking man. We have yet to learn what Reyes's motives are. Hopefully we'll get that addressed when season 11 premieres. But I just noticed that. I noticed some parallels. Not only do they, you know, somewhat look similar, but I feel like Carter has kind of been, you know, what he's done with Reyes in season 10, not to get ahead of the game, but, you know, is reflective of what he did with Diana Fowley in this two-parter.
The Sixth Extinction 2, Amor Fati, is the second episode of the season, and this one was written by David Duchovny and Chris Carter, and it was directed by Michael Watkins. In this episode, the cigarette-smoking man takes Mulder from the hospital and appears to offer him the chance of a fresh start. Scully, meanwhile, searches for her partner. Well, we both alluded in the first part of this podcast to the fact that we felt the middle part was kind of like transitional or functional, so this one I find much more worthwhile and interesting. What about you?
It is much more interesting and certainly does have a whole lot more going on in terms of the plot advancement. I found it a little confusing, to be honest, with certain parts of it, as I'm sure pretty much anyone does. But yes, I definitely think it's an improvement over the first part.
Go on then. Which aspects did you find confusing them?
Well, mostly having to do with the idea of, you know, what caused Mulder to fall into the condition that we see him in, you know, Biogenesis, the first part of the Sixth Extinction, how and why he's cured, specifically talking about alien DNA. I mean, the episode opens with Cigarette Smoking Man communicating to Mulder telepathically, at least that's how it seemed to me. I mean, neither of them are moving their lips. So if alien DNA breeds telepathy, which is kind of what was suggested in the first part, does the cigarette smoking man already possess alien DNA because he's able to communicate telepathically with Mulder? And then they begin to speak, you know, in conversation. But I hadn't noticed that before, and I was kind of intrigued about, you know, whether that was simply a stylistic effect on the part of the director, writer, perhaps. But I don't know. That opened up some questions for me. And then, of course, the whole surgery, operation, whatever, between Mulder and Cigarette Smoking Man towards the end, where you see Mulder and you see CSM on the table, seeming to imply that Cigarette Smoking Man took away the alien DNA from Mulder, took away his immunity to the coming viral apocalypse, I think is explicitly stated. So I have questions about all that in relation to how the plot proceeds in the future.
I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down on the finer details, not least because I can't always remember the answers myself. But
yeah.
What I will say is there's a great website, eatthecorn.com. I'm sure you're familiar with it, Andrew.
I did. Yeah, I actually checked this episode out on that one because I was trying to look for some guidance because it's a very detailed and very authoritative, you know, guide to the mythology. And I was just trying to, you know, make sure I was understanding things correctly.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's always convoluted and it's always open to different, you know, interpretations and everything.
I mean, your reaction to these episodes is not uncommon, I don't think. And I can't quite remember how I felt about them, like, first time around, but I think I have come to appreciate them more over time. The main thing I like about this one, I mean, Scully's got some interesting stuff, but basically it's the Mulder CSM stuff I like here the most. You've got this, like, CSM's offer of the road not taken with this idyllic, you know, domestic life that he kind of sets up for Mulder. And I mean, I think most viewers will immediately know it's not, you know, this is not reality. But even so, I do like the way that the realism of the scenario breaks down and gets more surreal. I just love the way that half of the story advances. So, I mean, did you have any thoughts on that? I mean, it's good to see some of the old characters back again, like Deep Throat and a quick glimpse of Samantha. So it's got some, like, surface pleasures, even if you're not really into the whole concept, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that was the strongest part of the episode for me was the dream sequences. I think there's a lot there to unpack and a lot to analyze. I like that, you know, you've got kind of the exploration of what Mulder's life with Diana Fally may have been like. I mean, we never get official confirmation that they were, you know, in a quote-unquote, you know, real romantic relationship or whatever. It very much seems to be the case, but this takes that a step further. You see Deep Throat. You kind of imagine Mulder with a life had he not chosen the life he did. And that's one of the reasons, just real quick to harken back to the past season with Arcadia. I love that episode because that's kind of it's not a dream, it's reality, but it's a what if of, you know, what would his life may have been if he were not in this vast government conspiracy. But so yeah, no, that's the strongest part of the episode for me. One thing I did want to point out on relation to that, I mean, towards the end of the episode, but part of that dream sequence, we kind of get a snapshot into what the alien apocalypse could look like. You have Cigarette Smoking Man looking out the window, and the camera pans back, and you're kind of taking in the, you know, the end of the world kind of thing. And I thought it was really interesting because, you know, Mulder and him are really the last two alive, yeah, at least the characters we see. So I like the dream sequences. I thought those were really effective.
Yeah, I do too. And Scully's obviously up to her own stuff in this episode. And I think we see Albert Hostein, don't we, in this part?
Yes.
And of course she's after, you know, she's ultimately is searching for Mulder. But what did you feel about what Scully was up to?
I definitely liked her plot more in this second part than in the first part. I felt like she had more to do. I really liked them bringing back Albert Hostein, even though it suggested that it was only as a ghost. But I thought that was really effective to kind of, I mean, we hadn't seen him in years. And I liked the mission that Scully's kind of put on in this episode, trying to find Mulder, and the confrontation between her and Diana Fally is really good. And I like that Scully really does appear to be kind of the impetus behind her switching allegiances, Fally switching allegiances and ultimately saving him.
Yeah. Cause it's an interesting artistic choice, of course, that we don't see Diana Fowley's death on screen. And I know that lots of fans would have, like, you know, would have bought tickets to see it, you know, right, to see that if possible. I'm struck on rewatching the series, as I am at the moment, by, I think Mimi Rogers does a really good job as Fowley, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that fans have such a visceral reaction against her character is pretty much a testament to her good work. Yeah, well, how would you kind of sum up Fowley's kind of status in the series as a whole? Do you think she's a character that worked well? Could they have done more with her?
Oh, I mean, I think she probably served her part pretty well with the episode. I mean, ultimately, the way you introduce her in the end is going to be an immediate, you know, kind of middle finger to fans, I think, who want to see Scully and Mulder together. She's the romantic foil. But then you take her a step farther and she's in the two-parter, Two Fathers, One Son. She joins kind of together with Cigarette Smoking Man. And like I said, we never really get much interaction between them after that, before she's killed in this episode. But I do think, I think she was pretty integral to the middle part of the series. And I, like you said, I think she's a fine actress, and I thought the character as a whole served the series pretty well with what she brought to it.
Yeah, I'll go along with that too. I think one thing that I should have mentioned earlier, it's kind of remiss not to mention it, I think, is that the Mulder storyline is, what's always cited is the book and the film, The Last Temptation of Christ, where you get kind of like an alternative vision of what Jesus' life could have been like. But again, Chris Knowles has pointed out to me that there's an episode of a 1960s series called The Invaders. There's an episode of that series which contains quite striking similarities to Amor Fati. So it's on YouTube. It's well worth checking out if anyone's got the time. It's called The Innocent. I've watched the episode. I can see what Chris means. So I always find it interesting to check out like influences and that kind of thing on The X-Files. So I'll just point that out.
Definitely. And one thing I wanted to point out real quick just before we go, I mean, since the whole point of the Podwatch is building to the premiere of season 11, one of the things we saw in the season 10 finale, My Circle 2, to me, I noticed the parallels right away between this episode and that, at least initially. I mean, here in the Sixth Extinction 2, Cigarette Smoking Man's offering Mulder basically what he calls in season 10 a seat at the big table. You know, he's asking him to join forces with him. And then you launch into the whole dream sequences that you see in this episode. But I can't help but note some of the parallels and wonder what Carter's end game is with this, you know, what we might see unfold in My Struggle 3. Because, you know, Carter's known to kind of repeat themes and repeat plot points. Not always a bad thing. Sometimes there's, you know, full parallels and bringing things full circle, and that's good and everything. But I am curious to see if we see more influences finish out the My Struggle arc, because I think that there's some connections there that have to do, you know, with this episode.
Just really quickly before we finish, I think we should mention that hallway scene between Mulder and Scully at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know it's kind of a very popular scene with people who identify themselves as shippers. And it's a very nice, very tender scene. Both actors play it really well. Did you have any comments on that scene?
Other than that, that's my favorite scene of the entire episode and one of my favorite of the entire series, to be honest. I felt like you got a real sense of the camaraderie there between Mulder and Scully. And for shippers, it's just, I mean, it is a great, you know, great moment. I think it's a great moment for the characters, though, beyond the whole shipper notice. It's a great way to kind of launch into the rest of the season, which, you know, I felt like on the whole, real quick, just to reflect on the idea of what season 7 brings, it's obviously not the last season, but it was looking like it may be the end of the show. And keeping that possibility in mind, the tone of the season is rather valedictory. You know, I mean, it's very, it spoofs the show, it mocks the show, but it also brings, you know, a lot of characters full circle, especially in the season 7 finale. So I think that kind of cements the partnership of Mulder and Scully, and I think that this moment at the end of Amor Fati is just really well done.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think you're right. I think a lot of cast and crew were thinking it was more likely than not that this would have been the final season. It's something that's worth bearing in mind as people carry on with their rewatches through the rest of season 7.
Yeah.
And tomorrow on the podcast, it's going to be Hungry and Millennium. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter at @X_cast and find us on Facebook. Type in XCast. You should find our page and our group, which is called X-Files Basement, the XCast podcast fan group. Okay, thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
And until next time, listeners, trust no one.